Support comes from AgriGold, celebrating their 12th year as a major corporate underwriter of Illinois Public Media's ag programming and e-newsletter. AgriGold's support allows their customers and growers everywhere to receive quality ag information at no charge. More information on AgriGold is at AgriGold.com.
From the land of Grand Teutoburg City in Urbana-Champaign, Illinois, this is the closing market report for the fourth day of September 2015. I'm Todd Gleason. Coming up in this half hour, we'll talk about the commodity markets with Mike Zuzulo. He's a global commodity analytics and consulting in Atchison, Kansas. Andy Schaefer of the Andersons Everly, Iowa facility should join us to take a look at the cash grain market. We'll hear a little bit about the weather forecast, too. That with Jim Angel from the Illinois State Water Survey. And along the way, we'll talk about pork and soybean meal prices and how the two have worked together to lower the retail price of a pork chop. And it all happens right here on this Friday edition of the Closing Market Report from Illinois Public Media.
Todd Gleason's services are made available to WILL by University of Illinois Extension.
We'll check the numbers as they finished up on this Friday afternoon. September contract in the corn pit from Chicago at 349.5, up a penny and three quarters. December at 363, up 1.5 cents. And the March contract at 374.5, a penny and a half higher. May futures 381.5 in the corn, up 1.5. And July at 386.5, up a penny. Next year's December contract finished at 388.25, up a quarter of a cent. That for the new crop corn. Soy complex bean futures 877.25. The settlement price down 2.5 cents in the September, November at 866.5, down 3, and January at 869.75, 3.75 lower. March contract down 3.5 at 871, July at 876.25, down 3.5, and next year's November at 859.75, 3.5 lower. Bean meal at 313.90, down 260 in the September, and the bean oil at 2644, down 32. Wheat futures soft red. September 457.75, up a penny and a quarter. July futures at 486.75, up 2.5 cents. September hard red wheat at 7 higher, 448.5, and the July at 507.75, up 6.5. Live cattle futures in the October down $1.07.5 at $140.52.5. December at 142.87.5, a dollar lower. Feeder cattle finished the September down $1.40 in the lead September at 201.15. The October contract at $195.62.5. They're down $1.70 for 100 pounds. Lean hogs in the October down 30 at 69.15. December at 63.37.5, finished 65 cents lower. You're listening to the Closing Market Report. It comes to you from Illinois Public Media.
Support for WILL comes from Busey. With more than 145 years of experience, Busey understands the benefits healthy businesses provide the local economy. Proudly partnering with the business community since 1868. Busey, your dream, our promise.
Here are some of the outside market numbers at this hour. Crude oil in the October at $45.86 a barrel, down 89 cents. Ethanol at $1.45.5, or rather $1.45.4, that's up 8 tenths of a cent. And gasoline on the RBOB, the wholesale price, $1.41.6 of a cent per gallon. That's down 2 1/10 of a cent. Heating oil or diesel fuel down 2.5 at $1.59.3. And natural gas at $2.65.4, 7 1/10 of a cent lower. The Dow Jones Industrial Average down 283 points at 16,068. The dollar index is down 0.183 at 96.24. And gold futures in New York at $1,119.50 are down $4.50. The weather forecast for the Urbana-Champaign area says it's hot today. You know that already. 90 degrees outside tonight. A 20% chance of rainfall. That before 10 in the evening. Partly cloudy. A low of 69. South winds this evening at 3 to 6. And Saturday, a 20% chance of rainfall before 1 in the afternoon. Mostly sunny and a high of 92. South-southwest winds tomorrow at about 6 miles an hour. And then on Saturday evening, clear and 69. Sunday, sunny and 93. Sunday evening, clear and 69. And for Labor Day, a 30% chance of rainfall, partly sunny, a high of 90 degrees. And Monday evening, a chance of showers, mostly cloudy, will drop down to a low of 70. More on the weather forecast when we get to the bottom of the half hour. We'll hear from Jim Angel.
Support comes from Stewart Peterson. Since 1985, Stewart Peterson has offered strategic commodity consulting and marketing services to help producers manage market opportunities and risks. The firm develops dynamic strategies customized to each client's goals and operation size. Information is available at stewart-peterson.com.
I'm University of Illinois Extension's Todd Gleason here on the Urbana-Champaign campus of the U of I. You're listening to the Closing Market Report from Illinois Public Media. We're joined by Mike Zuzulo. He's a global commodity analytics and consulting out of Atchison, Kansas. Good afternoon to you, Michael.
Todd, great to be with you again, sir.
It is very good to be with you. I want you to start in the wheat, and a lot closer to me than you, because I'd like you to start in the hard red winter wheat. What caused it to jump 7 cents today in the nearby September contract?
I think they're finally getting to the point in the cash market, and the September being deliverable is our best representation of the cash market, that the high-quality hard red wheat is very, very hard to find. And I think some of those lighter yields that we picked up on about a month and a half ago when harvest was in full swing is starting to be realized in the cash wheat market. It has, in the hard red wheat market, been able to divorce itself from the soft red market and the European market and that weak export market. And so I think this feature in the hard red market today, Todd, and I would expect it to continue all the way into the fall months, in an attempt to maybe garner some more acreage in the new crop planting. But I guess my mindset would be you're probably in a situation where the domestic market is tightening up quite a bit, and that's insulating it from the negative exports in the soft red market.
So soft red corn and soybeans are all under the gun from the export market is what you're trying to say, I think.
Yes, and you know, this brings up a big point. USDA is very unlikely, in my opinion, and I think the trade believes this as well, to come in and lower corn and bean yields next week, mainly, in my opinion, because of the fact that we've had no real reductions in crop conditions, especially this past week, and it's probably unlikely we'll get anything on Tuesday when they come back from a holiday. But yet I'm going to officially recommend clients and subscribers to buy into and get long the corn market, and in an attempt to try and cover and offset a potential crop insurance indemnity or claim that they may be able to get. So this is a big feature, and the question is, why would I want to be doing that? It really goes back to what you're talking about. I think we've priced in some really bad demand, and carryover levels, based upon my model, for wheat, corn, and beans are at extremely high levels at this point.
Oops, go ahead and take care of it. There you go. Fax machine kicked in. Are you still with me?
Yeah, sorry about that.
Oh, that's okay. I didn't know how far you had to get away from your microphone. That's okay.
But on my price model, I think the trade is at between a 1.8 and 2 billion bushel carryover in corn. I think the trade is at about a 500 to 510 million bushel carryover in beans, and this is new crop. And in the wheat especially, and this turns us back full circle to your original question, with another 7% lower move since last report, since the August 12th report, as of today's close, I think we're somewhere around a 900 to 920 million bushel carryover already priced in.
Okay. Well, I'm wondering, you don't think that USDA will change their yields. Are they unlikely to get enough ear weights to really manage to figure out what's happening in the eastern Corn Belt, or do you think they have it right?
Well, I don't think they have it right. I think that it is a data issue. I actually sent an email up to NASA's head, Lance Honig, earlier today, asking him whether the fact that we're at 92% harvested in corn in Louisiana as of this past Monday and 68% in Mississippi, which is literally double where we were last year at this time, and around halfway done in Arkansas, which they were only about 17% done last year at this time, would some of those early yields and some of those test weights and what you're talking about funnel into the September report. So I'll keep you abreast of that once I get an answer. I think that would be something that could change the scatter diagram. And I think that's what I'm looking for, is that scatter diagram of the ear pounds and the test weight, which measures the test weight and the population together. I think that the pounds per ear needs to come down. But the big $64,000 question is, when is it going to happen? Is it this month, or will they stretch it all the way out to November?
Do you have a best guess?
Well, like I said at the beginning, I think based upon the crop conditions, they don't have any real tendency to want to, because crop conditions are suggesting we haven't lost any yield at this stage from the August report. And that's the best I can go by. But again, I don't know the specifics as far as what they change in the September report versus the August report. Do they start to rely less upon survey data, and are they getting more actual data in? And hopefully we'll get an answer to that before Friday.
Anything on the macroeconomics that you'd like to update us on?
Yeah, following up with today and following up with this morning's commentary about the dollar, I think this is another secondary feature as to why I think it's worth getting some long positions in place in the corn market to offset a potential crop insurance claim. And it goes back to, we've had a second week higher in a row for the crude oil market this week. The last time we were able to do that was back in May. And the dollar has been just a little bit higher on the week and is really kind of flatlined. So I'm kind of eager to think that maybe between now and the Federal Reserve meeting, that dollar won't get too excited and go get charged up and go a sharp leg higher and bring the commodities right back down again. So there's a couple things working in the outside markets that give me a little bit more confidence to risk some money on the client's behalf here.
Things that we should check in with for the livestock?
Yeah, we do have some international trade data that came out earlier this morning, and it was not very nice for the beef complex in terms of the August numbers, less than what the trade was expecting as far as beef exports go. And I think, Todd, we saw that show up in the price action today. Pork wasn't as negative, and plus we came off a pretty doggone good week of weekly export sales for the pork as well. So pork held up a lot better. Notice that the cash index in the hogs is still above 76, while the October lead month hogs is below 70. I think these two numbers need to come together in the next couple, 3 weeks. So be ready to get some hedges in place if we see the October futures move up towards that $73, $74, $75 level.
On the idea that later on things are going to drop off.
I think later on we'll get a bigger amount of cattle coming in and maybe a slowdown in consumption, especially with this equity market sell-off. If that keeps up, you'll probably see a lighter domestic consumption down the road here.
Thank you so much.
Have a great weekend and get rested up.
You too. Enjoy your Labor Day. That, of course, is Mike Zuzalo. He's at Global Commodity Analytics and Consulting in Atchison, Kansas. Let's take a look at some of the agricultural news for the day. Next week, Congress will return to Washington, D.C. in the fight over stopping the Environmental Protection Agency's controversial WOTUS, or Waters of the U.S. rule. It's likely to resume. The renewed fight comes as a federal judge has partially blocked WOTUS implementation. Hill opponents of WOTUS, Republicans and Democrats, now have more reason to block the EPA's sweeping expansion of its waters jurisdiction, given the injunction that delays implementation for 13 states. A leading opponent of the rule that still stands in 37 states, Chuck Grassley, says he and other lawmakers will go after EPA and the pocketbook, while the courts sort out the legal issues.
So the next best approach, or maybe even the best approach, is what we're going to do in the Congress by putting an amendment on the EPA appropriation bill saying that none of the money in this appropriation bill can be used to carry out Waters of the U.S.
The question, though, is how to secure such an amendment when it's not likely Congress will lump all spending bills into one giant funding bill called an omnibus. The House passed a separate ban on WOTUS. The Senate Environment Committee has done the same. However, neither body has banned WOTUS on an EPA spending bill, making prospects for doing so now murky at best. But Grassley says it's a quicker solution than just leaving it up to the courts.
I definitely feel that this is going to go on through the courts until it reaches the Supreme Court, so this is not a final answer. I'm sure that if the EPA feels that the North Dakota decision affects their ability to control every square inch of farmland in Iowa and other states, that they're going to appeal it.
As the Senate Judiciary Committee Chair Grassley says, he'd like to have the North Dakota District Court decision appealed to the Eighth Circuit Court of Appeals in St. Louis. However, there's no telling when or if that will happen. And lawmakers like Grassley will not wait to find out while EPA goes ahead with WOTUS in three quarters of the country. There are many other things happening in Washington, D.C. A group of agriculture organizations is now urging the United States House to pass a multi-year surface transportation bill. A letter from the organizations yesterday called on the House to pass the legislation to provide greater certainty for transporting agricultural products. The areas identified in the letter include delaying positive train control implementation to prevent disruption in supply of inputs and movement of grain. The letter also called for work to ease trucking congestion and increase weight limits, as well as addressing hours of service rules to avoid discomfort for livestock. The letter notes the Senate has already passed a reauthorization bill for the Surface Transportation Board. 28 farm groups signed the letter that was sent to the full House. This little news brief is on the international, not the national stage. The World Trade Organization has ordered the United States to lift a ban on beef imports from Argentina. The WTO dispute settlement body earlier this week endorsed a panel ruling siding in Argentina's favor. Argentina said the country will resume beef sales to the United States before the end of the year, putting an end to the 14-year ban. And that's a quick look at today's agricultural news. For University of Illinois Extension, I'm Todd Gleason. Well, the retail price of a pork chop is getting cheaper, and one of the main reasons is the decline in the price of soybean meal. Bean meal is an important but economically secondary feed ingredient in hog diets compared to corn. However, Purdue University agricultural economist Chris Hurt thinks soybean meal costs as a feed ingredient have been about 22% of the total cost of raising hogs over the past decade, and this compares to 32% for corn. In recent years, soybean meal has been pretty high priced. For the calendar years of 2012, 13, and 14, USDA reports that Decatur, Illinois high-protein meal has had an annual average price between $440 and $480 a ton. But with a record U.S. soybean crop harvested last fall, and with the second largest crop likely coming this fall, Decatur prices may drop to about $350 per ton, and then, as fall turns to winter, even further to average near $325 per ton for calendar year 2016. He says it would be the lowest annual meal price since 2007.
How much have lower soybean meal prices contributed to lower hog production cost? From the 2014 high at $480 a ton to the projected $325 a ton in calendar 2016, cost of production would have dropped $5.40 per live hundredweight just due to meal price reductions.
Livestock producers may adjust the corn-to-meal ratios in diets somewhat depending on the prices of these two primary feed ingredients. For example, the 2012 drought caused corn prices to be really high relative to soybean meal. The relationship caused some shifting to higher protein diets because meal was relatively lower cost than corn. Then for the 2013 and 14 crops, corn shifted to be cheaper relative to meal, and this caused some to reduce their protein levels. In the coming year, corn and meal prices are returning to a more normal long-term relationship.
Estimated total cost of production for a hundredweight of live hogs reached the highest calendar year average in 2012. That was $67 per hundredweight. That dropped to an average of $51 for 2015. Our current projections for 2016 are that total cost will remain right around $51. Clearly, a $16 per hundredweight drop in feed costs from 2012 to 2015 is a major reduction.
Record cost of production was a contributor, says Purdue University's Chris Hurt, to higher retail prices. These topped out in September of 2014 at $4.22 a pound for USDA's composite pork average. Of course, PED death losses also contributed to the reduced pork production of 2014. Lower-priced feed and better control of PED has resulted in higher pork production. As a result, consumer pork prices have now fallen to $3.77 a pound. Given this, hog producer margins are expected to be near just break-even for both this year and next year. Estimated costs are near $51, and expected live hog prices are near $50. This means a $1 to $2 loss per head. Break-even implies that supply and demand are close to an equilibrium and that all resources are receiving a normal rate of return. This implies producers have little financial incentive to expand or to contract. It also means that the lower feed costs over the past few years have been built into pork production, and consumers will now be the beneficiaries of reduced retail prices. The Closing Market Report is a production of Illinois Public Media. Find us online at willag.org. That's willag.org. On this Friday afternoon, let's check with Andy Schaefer. He manages the elevator in Everly, Iowa for the Andersons. Thanks so much, Andy, for being on with us this afternoon. Last week when we talked to you, you had quite a little bit of rain in the area. Did the crops and the land take that fairly decently?
Yeah, it sure did, Todd. We especially with the temperatures being approaching 90 degrees, we've been mid-80s here for the past 5 to 6 days, so the fields definitely were wet, but this warm weather, it is just we needed this warm weather and we got it. So no one's complaining at all about that rain that we got last week.
How far out from harvest do you believe you are at this time?
Oh, if I had to guess it today, and you know, we keep asking that questions ourselves because, you know, of our seven elevators up here, we're trying to manage the space and whatnot. But we think probably the last week in September, we're going to start to see soybean and corn harvest pick up. We don't expect it to be one or the other. I think they're both going to kind of come off at the same time. Because we're watching fields, especially with this heat, it seems like every time we leave the office, we drive by the same field, and it looks just like a little lighter shade of green every time we drive by, especially with this heat.
Our fields look a little brighter shade of yellow.
yeah, a little brighter shade of yellow, a little less green.
Yeah, things are turning fairly quickly. Did your bean crop get bigger in the last week and a half, do you suppose?
I think so, especially some of those beans that are a little later and they're filling pods. So if there's any surprises, you know, just talking to some seed dealers and agronomists, they're really thinking that we could be surprised with the soybean crop simply because of that. We got the wet weather and it was a little later, and those beans that are green, I think they have a great opportunity. We've had the heat and we've had the moisture, so I'm not sure what more we can ask for.
Do you suppose your basis is going to get, for corn this is, a lot weaker this harvest season than it has in the past? Will you have not enough room to put it all away?
In our geographic area, I think with as much as demand and space we have, it should fade a little bit. We're at 40 under right now on corn, and there hasn't been any signs that that's going to get weaker. The problem is that none of the farmers want to sell the grain, so it's difficult to get basis ownership. And with the ethanol plants that don't participate in DP or storage, they have to somehow buy basis grain and get ownership. So they might be bidding up the market for grain.
Thanks, Andy. Andy Schaefer, of course, is with the Andersons Everly, Iowa facility, joins us on this Friday afternoon to take a look at the cash grain market. We'll be back in 2 minutes to take a look at the weather forecast. Jim Angel will be here from the Illinois State Water Survey Prairie Research Institute on the Urbana-Champaign campus of the U of I.
It's National Macadamia Nut Day. On this day in agricultural history in 1783, Frederick Tudor was born. An American businessman long before refrigeration, he was among the first to create an export trade in block ice, harvested from frozen freshwater ponds in New England in the winter. The ice was shipped to India, Europe, and the Caribbean. In 1801, Colin Whipple was born, an American inventor and machinist. He patented the first practical screw machine in the U.S. for making pointed screws. Early screws had blunt ends, making it necessary to drill a starter hole. He also invented and patented seven other machines for improving the manufacture of screws. In 1885, the Exchange Buffet opened, the first self-service restaurant. In 1888, George Eastman was issued a landmark U.S. patent for his box camera. On the same date, he registered the trademark name Kodak. The camera used a fixed-focus lens fast enough to take practically instantaneous exposures and held enough film for 100 pictures. And in 1917, Irving Colburn died, an American inventor. His process for fabricating continuous sheets of flat glass made mass production of glass for windows possible. Colburn went bankrupt before the technology was perfected, and he was bought out by the Toledo Glass Company, who hired him on to finalize the technology. And that's this day in agricultural history.
Couple of items of note as we head into the Labor Day weekend. First, be careful when you're out on the roads. Farmers are likely to begin moving machinery, if not shucking corn over the weekend. I'm sure next week and certainly the following week, things will begin to really ramp up in parts of the state of Illinois and Indiana. The second item is on the 14th of September. That is a Monday evening. We'll be at the Farm Credit Illinois building at 6:30 in the evening with one of our Will Ag Outlook panels. You can check out WILLAG.org and look into the calendar to see all the details. There you'll also find that the Farm Assets Conference has been scheduled. That's our brand new signature event we started last year. It's an annual event and coming up in November. It's the 24th, the Tuesday. We'll be in Normal, Illinois, the Farm Assets Conference. You'll be buying your tickets soon, but put it on your calendar today. It's a great, great event, a signature Will Ag U of I Extension event in Normal, Illinois on Tuesday, November the 24th.
This is Jim Angel, state climatologist located at the Illinois State Water Survey at the Prairie Research Institute on the campus of the University of Illinois. August was both cooler and drier than average. The statewide average precipitation was 3 inches, which is 0.6 inches below average. The only wet area of the state was east of St. Louis along Interstate 70. However, the dry August did not keep this from being the 6th wettest summer on record, thanks to the very wet June and wet July. The statewide total for summer was 17.2 inches, which was 5.4 inches above average and only 1.3 inches away from the record set in 1993. The statewide temperature for August was 1.6 degrees below average. The statewide temperature for the summer was 1.3 degrees below average. September is starting out hot and dry with temperatures running 7 to 8 degrees above average and no significant rain. That pattern will continue through Labor Day weekend with highs in the 90s for most of the state. A cold front will work its way through the state on late Monday and Tuesday, bringing with it cooler weather and a chance of rain. The chances for rain will continue through Thursday morning. The potential rainfall totals are in the 1 to 3 inch range for the state. Highs on Tuesday and for the rest of the week will be in the 70s. Overnight lows on Sunday, Monday, and Tuesday will be in the low 70s. However, after that cold front pushes through on Monday and Tuesday, lows will drop into the 50s and 60s for the rest of the week. This is Jim Angel, state climatologist at the Illinois State Water Survey.
Our thanks to Jim Angel and the Illinois State Water Survey Prairie Research Institute for the weekly update of agricultural weather across the great state of Illinois. We check in with him each and every Friday. If you'd like to hear what Jim has to say or any of our meteorologists, you can find them on our website. Just look over to the side in the menu items. If you're on a smartphone, those may be down at the bottom. You'll be looking for weather. Drew Lerner's weather is there each and every morning. And in the afternoon, we have a series of five climatologists and meteorologists looking at the weather forecast, not only for Illinois, but across the nation and the planet. The best weather in the business right there at willag.org. You have a great Labor Day weekend and have fun with your family. I'm Todd Gleason.